Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Big vote yesterday on Capitol Hill. Can you tell us a little bit about how you voted and why on the American Health Care Act?
Yeah, of course I voted yes. I mean, this is what I tell people. Republicans came back in the majority because of the failure of Obamacare. The Senate was turned over to Republicans because of Obamacare and, you know, climate debates. And the president, part of the success of Donald Trump was his highlighting the problems with Obamacare and how it's, especially in the individual market, unaffordable. A report came out just like a day before the vote in the state of Iowa. 94 counties out of 99 would have no insurer. So I mean, it just highlighted how the markets are collapsing all around, and this is a rescue mission to make sure that people can purchase affordable, accessible, competitive health care insurance. And we are very happy that we're moving it over now to the Senate.
Now, one of the terms used to describe this in your statement issued yesterday was that, you know, what we had with Obamacare was one size fits all health care plans. How has the American Health Care Act changed that?
Well, we're going to go back to an incentivized private market. I mean, I just gave you the examples of Iowa, where if you have 99 counties and only five have one insurer and nobody else has any insurer, we want to incentivize the insurance market back into places across the country. So that's what our plan will do. And then when we do that, when you have competition, then you have multiple choices. Under the current law, you only have four. You have the bronze, the silver, the gold, and the platinum. And that's dictated by the federal government. I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's why the insurers are leaving the markets, because they can't afford, or if they're trying to make ends meet, they keep raising premiums and deductibles. I mean, the outcry is out there. I mean, one of the biggest people who can articulate the problems of Obamacare is your friend Tom Miller, who does it regularly, and he knows how he's being priced out of the market.
Yes, well, I'm being priced out of this market as well. I'm a single parent with one daughter who, you know, has no health problems or anything like that. And in order to insure her, even with my employer, would cost me about $12,000 a year at this point, as a 13-year-old who hasn't ever even been prescribed antibiotics in her life.
Right.
So it's a struggle for me to figure out how to deal with that as well.
Right.
Now, this plan, just to hit the high points for our listeners, it ends the mandate to have insurance. It takes away that penalty. It also, instead of giving subsidies to purchase health care, it gives tax credits to help buy the insurance. It also rolls back the Obamacare expansion of Medicaid. And I know that Governor Rauner has said, you know, that he's not clear on exactly how that's going to affect Illinois' finances. What are the states saying about that rollback?
Well, a lot of them, you know, we worked with a lot of governors, and every state's kind of in a different position, you know, whether they're fiscally sound or they're not. Medicaid is a mandatory entitlement spending program. And what Obamacare did, and this Medicaid portion was really directly what came through my committee of jurisdiction. So this is, of all the things of the repeal and replace, I know the Medicaid portion best of all. And so what... basically, you had traditional Medicaid, which the federal government pays 50 cents and the state pays 50 cents on traditional disabled, low-income, poor, and we can't, Illinois can't afford that, more or less. The expanded Medicaid portion, which at the first was promised and delivered 100% on the expansion. Now, these are the healthier people who then we call it a churning market, where they, you know, they may go out and have no health care, then they go back in and they get a job with health care, and they may rotate back off, and that pretty good deal for the states for the first couple of years, because the federal government picked up the entire tab. So we were funding the healthier, more employable population over and shortchanging the poorest and the sickest among us. And but for a state like Illinois, they can't afford that. I mean, they can't even afford the 90-10 split in that expansion market. So what this does is provide the state a per capita grant, which means how much did they pay in 2016, and let's then give them an increase of the CPI medical plus 1% in some of these areas, and they're going to have to try to move to wellness, preventative care, education. They're really going to have to start working with the people that we are helping provide health care so they live healthier and smarter lives.
Okay. I know that's something that private insurers have tried to work with their insured, you know, for years. They've seen that as a way of reducing those expenses. So now moving over to the state doing that as well. Pre-existing conditions are what you see in your social media feeds, you know, a lot of concern about pre-existing conditions. Your statement says this does, include some protections for that as well. It's something that the states now can waive the requirement that insurers don't discriminate.
It's very confusing, and people just need to read the bill. It comes down to what's called a guaranteed issue. Everyone is guaranteed an issue of insurance, regardless of their status in life. Now, states, if they want to have their own way to guarantee issue for people with pre-existing conditions, they can then opt out. But they just can't opt out if they're not going to cover everybody or they're not going to provide guaranteed issue to everyone. So that's where it gets a little confusing. So that's why we're very safe with saying those with pre-existing conditions have guaranteed issue of insurance.
Okay. Now, this bill will now move on to the Senate. What do you anticipate? Do you anticipate some changes to the bill at that point?
I anticipate a lot of fun watching them work. It's about time that they start doing some work over there. And will they come up with some changes and refinements? They very well could. I actually had a dinner with one of the leading Republican members, and it was on another issue, but he said that they were working closely with the House on provisions and these amendments, and it gave me some optimism that they're going to take a pretty good run at it.
Okay. All right. And we've had our focus on what's been going on in Capitol Hill this week. I know you've, also been paying close attention to what's going on in your district. Residents in some areas recovering from flash flooding that occurred last weekend. Other residents dealing with river flooding happening now. And I know there's been a lot of farmland flooding as well. What are you hearing from your constituents about recovery?
Well, yeah, and every district's a little bit different. I know Congressman Boss is, dealing with the rising rivers. I have smaller streams. I mean, I do border on the Ohio. We're watching that. Most of the crests are going down now, except for in some areas. And I think Mike's is one of the areas that we're really watching the crest occur. And farmland flooding is what farmers put up all the time. I'm mostly concerned when people are driven out of their house and home, and then they got that messy recovery that has to occur, which is you wouldn't wish that on your biggest enemy. It's just it's just sad and terrible. But farmland can dry out. Farmland can get replanted. That's why we have safety net programs and the like. Congressman Davis, who's north of us, is also working on legislation. We just passed one this week, too. I mean, a lot of stuff has happened, and we hope to get through the House. Talks about the whole FEMA funding issue. Your station has really covered disasters and how sometimes we get the short stick because Chicago is such a wealthy part of the state, and so it makes it more difficult for the poor parts of Illinois to qualify. And we're pushing that, and I applaud, both my colleagues for their diligence in working on this.
We were talking earlier today with a couple of the EMA directors in the area as well. We have been covering all of that, and yes, fortunately, I mean, no one ever wants to deal with a flood. But fortunately, as you said, some of the forecasts earlier in the week for the river crest that have occurred in Congressman Boss District have been reduced some. So there has actually been a little bit less of that river flooding than anticipated. Everyone thankful for that. The sun has come out today. That always makes everyone feel at least just a little bit better. One other thing that you've been commenting on in the news recently is nuclear waste storage. And you had said that you want to see the Yucca project restarted. Can you tell us a little bit about why that's the best solution here?
Yeah, I never used the term restarted because I've never claimed that it's been totally dead. The Obama administration, in essence, broke the law by just stopping funding, and that's been confirmed in court cases. So things have happened, but at such a glacier pace that it's embarrassing. So there's 39 states, I think 121 locations where there is either high-level nuclear waste or defense waste that we, by law, are supposed to put in a long-term geological repository and on government land where we detonated nuclear weapons in Nevada. It's the best place. It's the most studied piece of property. And now we got to go about, doing the final legislation, and we also have to get money to do the final adjudication. Nevada has one last chance just to raise issues with the science through the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We think, 2,000 scientists studying this for decades versus Nevada's four people who have been working on it will come down on the side that the science at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is an independent agency, is going to be sound. And then it's just a matter of figuring out how we collect, how do we move, how do we place it in interim locations while we still get the long-term repository. There are places where they could be very easily redeveloped, like the closed Zion nuclear power plant on Lake Michigan, which right now is closed except for high-level nuclear waste, which should be someplace else. The community up there would like for that stuff to move so that they can redevelop that property.
Yes, and that that's the only thing taking place in Zion, right? I mean, there's just this storage that happening.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the rest of that plant shut down now.
And there's quite a few of these now. And as you all follow the struggles on the nuclear power industry and how there's planned closures, this is going to just happen more and more. The question to the public is, do they want to have 121 locations around the country, or do you want to have one that is very well secured and really on federal property?
Seems like common sense to me. 8:36 now. You're listening to News Radio WJPF. What's your next week look like on Capitol Hill?
Well, we're home.
Oh, you're home. Okay.
We're home, so I'll be traveling around my district. Hopefully we're dried out enough to catch a few of my son's baseball games. The high school season's getting close to an end.
Uh-huh.
I think we're ready to be home again to visit with our constituents.
You're home to and watching the Senate do that work, huh? So
that's right. I don't know what their schedule is, whether they're off or not. So I don't know if they go back next week or not.